It's 6 hours, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa, coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. The Islamic State is claiming responsibility for a suicide truck bombing that killed at least 70 people at a gas station south of Baghdad. Many of the victims of Thursday's attack were Iranian pilgrims who had taken part in the Shiite holy holiday in the Iraqi city of Karbala. Reports also say Iraqi security forces were on high alert for the duration of the pilgrimage, seen as a potential target of the Islamic State. The United Nations says time is running out for 275,000 inhabitants of the Syrian city of Aleppo, whose food stocks are depleted. Lisa Schlein has more.
The last food provided by the World Food Program was distributed to the trapped residents of eastern Aleppo days ago. Now nothing is left. Repeated requests by the United Nations to send aid convoys into the city have been refused by one or more of the warring parties. Special advisor to the UN Special Envoy for Syria, Jan Egeland, says there are hopeful signs that all the necessary approvals may soon be forthcoming. Lisa Schlein, Geneva.
China's state media is reporting the death toll from the collapse of a scaffolding at a construction site in eastern China has risen to 74. Two others were injured after the work platform at a power plant cooling tower that was under construction collapsed on Thursday in what is said to be the worst construction accident in China in 2 years. Hundreds of rescue workers are said to have dug through the debris with their hands to try and reach those trapped. And a 7.0 earthquake struck El Salvador's Pacific coast. A tsunami warning was issued. There were no immediate reports of casualties there. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Ukraine's President Petro Poroshenko said Thursday that U.S. President-elect Donald Trump raised the questions of Russian aggression of the illegal annexation of Crimea during their telephone conversation. Poroshenko also told reporters he doesn't anticipate any changes in the U.S. support for Ukraine with the new administration coming in January.
Ukraine have a strong bipartisan support in the United States Congress, in the United States, among the United States politicians, both Republican and Democrat, and we don't expect any significant changes in this bipartisan support.
Comments made by Trump during the U.S. presidential campaign raised fears that if he won, he would tilt toward improving relations with Russia at Ukraine's expense. 8 Egyptian soldiers have been killed in a car bombing at a checkpoint in northern Sinai. Egyptian officials say at least 12 troops were injured and 3 militants also died in Thursday's attack. So far, no group has claimed responsibility. The U.S. military says one of its soldiers was killed Thursday in an explosion caused by an improvised explosive device, also known as IED, in northern Syria. U.S. Central Command, or CENTCOM, did not immediately release the nature of the incident or the soldier's name. U.S. troops, part of a multinational coalition, are in the region to fight the Islamic State group. Even before some Americans had finished with their Thanksgiving Day meals, people were lining up, some even camping outside stores, ready to take advantage of Black Friday shopping deals. Reporter Stephen Kim was at a mall in New York.
For some, Black Friday shopping has become an event worth documenting. For others, it's a tradition.
My best friend and I go every year.
And yet for many others, this is the first and last time they will do this. The experience just too aggressive and chaotic for their liking.
It was just a lot of shoving, a lot of pushing.
I think it's too crowded.
It's crazy. Would you do it again?
I doubt it. I think I'm going to go online and do it.
Black Friday starts a 4-day shopping weekend that includes small businesses on Saturday and Sunday, where shoppers are urged to make purchases at locally owned businesses, and Cyber Monday, the biggest internet shopping day of the year. And NATO has ended Operation Shield after a shop drop-off and attacks by Somali pirates. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Friday, November 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. One of the opposition candidates in Ghana's December 7th presidential election is concerned about the credibility of the vote.
It's obvious that the Electoral Commission did not extend the time for the campaign, and therefore the injury that has been caused by the disqualification obviously affects the transparency and above all the credibility of the election.
Bernard Mornard is the national chairman of the People's National Convention Party. There are allegations of irregularities in Somalia's current parliamentary election. Women rights campaigners want stiffer penalties on the so-called Malawi Hyena Men. And South Sudan women rights activists want an end to conflict to end violence against women.
If we don't get peace now, all the people of South Sudan will become violent because these people are traumatized. They want to express their trauma through violence.
Agnes Wasu is an activist with the South Sudan Council of Churches. Civil nurses who were on the front lines of the battle against Ebola are still waiting to get their regular salaries. And the skin patch uses sweat to monitor health. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post roundup and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Three Ghanaian opposition candidates who were disqualified from running in next month's presidential and parliamentary elections say they are concerned the vote is unlikely to be fair or credible. Bernard Mona, national chair of the People's National Convention Party, the PNC, tells viewers Peter Clotty the commission made an error when it decided to disqualify the three presidential candidates, saying the move negatively impacted the candidates' campaigns.
I'm sure that you have monitored events, particularly by the Electoral Commission, events that led to the unjustifiable disqualification of our presidential candidates. And that took a toll on our presidential candidates, particularly emotionally, financially, and logistical mobilization. You know that when they were disqualified, what it did was that it delayed their campaign agenda, and eventually it did not give them the kind of opportunity that they needed to get among the electorate. Despite that, the Electoral Commission was compelled by the Supreme Court to readmit our presidential candidates. It's obvious that the Electoral Commission did not extend the time for the campaign, and therefore the injury that has been caused by the disqualification obviously affects the transparency and above all the credibility of the election.
Some people have said that the Electoral Commission continues to engage with all political parties, including yours, the PNC, to address some of your concerns in the run-up or before the elections on December 7. Why hasn't this been done through IPAC?
Well, I don't know. The Electoral Commission has become too intransigent. They have become notorious in their quest to ensure that we advance the cause of our democracy. There are many decisions that the Electoral Commission has taken, particularly in 2016, without recourse to the political parties. We recall the setting up of the filing fees. This was done without the knowledge of the political parties. So we feel that the Electoral Commission, having the power of independence, does not mean that consultation should be thrown to the dustbin. And in these instances, the Electoral Commission has shown little faith in consultation. And we are deterred that such can lead to further litigation, and these litigations can derail our fourth march at the nation.
Some Ghanaians are saying that if the PNC, the PPP, and NDP are coming out to say that they don't have confidence in the ability of the Electoral Commission to administer a credible vote this year, why will these same parties go ahead and participate in the elections in the first place if you know the process is flawed?
We have raised concerns now, and we hope that these concerns will be addressed by the Electoral Commission. And we may take the next steps to ensure that we all come to peace with the Electoral Commission. It is not intended to derail the process, but it is intended to ensure that all of us are put on the same level so that we can navigate our elections on a successful path. If the Electoral Commission is not willing to engage us on those paths, then we will realize that it will lead to the frustration that will come our way. Despite this, I can assure you that the PNP is putting, in the face of the constraints, in the face of the emotional stress, in the face of the financial difficulties, And above all, the abuse of incumbencies that we are witnessing, we, in the face of all these difficulties, we will do our best to ensure that we are able to garner what votes we can get. But that is not to say that our concerns should not be taken on board. We have to raise and voice out this for the whole world to know that as a political party, we are interested in ensuring that the right thing is done. It is just that the Electoral Commission is becoming intransigent.
Bruno Amona is the national chairman of the Opposition People's National Convention Party of Ghana, who is speaking with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Accra. A former Somali member of parliament says corruption is to blame for the many problems that continue to plague Somalia's electoral process. Bishar Ogas Ibrahim says much of the corruption is coming from regional state electoral commissions during the delegates' election process. Somalia is currently holding parliamentary elections in the regional states, who in turn will choose the next president. But now, Somalia's two election monitoring bodies announced on Thursday they will launch an investigation into allegations of fraud in various regions of the country, including manipulation of delegate and candidate lists and the use of government security forces to favor some candidates over others. Ibrahim says the investigation into election malpractices will most likely delay the selection of the next president, which should have taken place November 30th next week.
It was the 3rd of this November. It's not possible to hold that until because of 40% is coming now for the MPs, and it is remained for other 60%. So that's not possible to hold in 30th of November.
What do you know about what we are hearing about some irregularities?
Yes, there is a lot. Now it is from, like me, I'm coming from Jubaland State. It is a lot of corruption, like Electoral Commission in Jubaland State of Somalia. They took money and they're using for the Jubaland State of local government. They're using force for, you know, somebody like they need, they want to select or choosing. And there's a lot of corruption anyway.
Who is doing the corruption?
Most corruption, it is coming from the Electoral Commission, local state of Jubaland State, like, you know, Galmudug, Jubaland State of Somalia, they have electoral commission. So they do delegates, 51 delegates, each MP is they are choosing. So what they do, they took money, one of the aspirants or the candidates, they say, give our money, like 30,000, 20,000, and then they select that guy. They're choosing delegates. And then, like me, I was a candidate, I form MPs, and they choose other guy. He's given money, like a 30,000 money. He's given the chairman of the Electoral Commission in Jubaland State of Somalia.
Tell me, we understand that this lower house that's being elected is supposed to also elect the president or the prime minister. So if there's this delay, what happens? Are we likely to have an election for president soon?
Yes. They are coming to Mogadishu and then they're elected to the president. And they're looking money because of grassroots, they're coming corruption, and they're coming up in Mogadishu. They're looking money. That's must. It is coming corruption of Somali election 2016.
For our listeners who don't know how the Somali election works, here in the United States, when there is an election for president, for parliament, the voters will go and vote, and whoever wins is the winner. How does the Somali election process work?
Yes, Somali government, it is coming from the civil war since 1991. This is the first election to make in Somalia. It's making MPs. They're choosing for delegates, 51 each MPs. And then 51 delegates, they elected MPs. And then after MPs is going, that MPs, member of parliament, they elected president of Somalia next 2017.
Now, if there is a delay, the election for the president will also be delayed.
Yes, that's must. Because of it is remain 60% lower house and 40% for Senate upper house. It still remain. That's why the plan was 30 of November is elected president of Somalia. That's not possible now. Today is 24 November. It is remain 6 days, the date of planning. And then it will become delay.
Bishar Ogas Ibrahim is a former member of the Somali Parliament. He was speaking with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, November 25th. And please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudanese women rights activists are calling on their government officials to punish criminals who rape and assault women. The activists have kicked off 16 days of activism against gender-based violence. Michael Atit has the story for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of women activists at workshop on combating violence against women and girls sing song to boost each other's morale. The women activists say the number of victims and survivors of gender-based violence has increased since violence broke out in Juba in July between government and rebel forces. They say violence has destroyed South Sudan's image. Agnes Wasuk, an activist working for the South Sudan Council of Churches, says the absence of peace in the country contributes to the rampant cases of violence, especially against women.
People are very angry, people are hurt, people are oppressed. That's why they behave negatively because of that. If we don't get peace now, all the people of South Sudan will become violent because these people are traumatized. They want to express their trauma through violence.
Wasuk says women activists under the umbrella group National Women Program of the South Sudan Council of Churches will spend the next 2 weeks advocating for peace and creating awareness among communities on the need to end all violence and revenge attacks across the country.
That's why this particular workshop is to teach, to skill the people from the churches so that they go and create awareness in their churches that violence is negative.
Another activist who refers to herself as Mama Keji says violence is becoming rampant among South Sudanese communities. She says because South Sudanese have experienced so many years of conflict, people no longer respect the rights of fellow citizens as they did before.
Sometimes you see even children are aggressive to their fathers and mothers. They are aggressive to their sisters and brothers, even girls. Sometimes they are aggressive. Then we need to teach them how can stay together as a family, how we can respect ourselves.
Lona James Elia is with the NGO Voice for Change. She says women need to see perpetrators of rape, sexual assault, and harassment arrested and face their alleged victims in the court of law.
This is not acceptable at all. Not acceptable by any of one of the 64 communities in South Sudan. We didn't see killing of women during our wars. We never saw women, old women, being raped by their young children. This is not acceptable, and we're actually urging that for those who are doing that, and if they're really caught, they should be brought to justice.
The 16 days of activism runs through December the 10th, which is International Human Rights Day. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
A Malawi court has sentenced to 2 years in prison a man who admitted he is infected with the virus that causes AIDS for having unprotected sex with girls as part of a traditional custom. Women's rights campaigners say the sentence is too lenient and are calling on the High Court to review the lower court decision. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Eric Aniva is known in his community as a hyena, the traditional title given to a man paid by widows to sexually cleanse them after the death of their husband and by families to have sex with underaged girls to mark their passage from puberty to adulthood. He has said he received a fee of between $4 and $7 to perform the ritual. At the time of his arrest, Eric Aniva admitted to deflowering more than 100 young girls as young as 12 years old during an initiation ceremony known as Kusasa Fumbi, or removing dust. He also admitted that he is HIV positive, a fact he said he never revealed to the families that hired him, and that he does not use any protection when conducting the ritual. No woman testified in court to having slept with the hyena. Thus, the lower court sentenced Aniva to 2 years in prison for engaging in harmful cultural practices under the Malawi's 2013 Gender Equality Act, which carries a maximum of 5 years in prison for violation of the law. In a joint statement, the Malawi Human Rights Resources Center and several women's rights groups expressed shock at the lower court ruling. Emma Galia, the executive director for the Malawi Human Rights Resources Center, told VOA that despite many mitigating factors, the lower court could have imposed a stiffer penalty.
It is also sending a wrong signal that you can do that, you can get a sentence even lesser than 2 years. We cannot continue violating women just like that.
Chief Theresa Kashindamoto is a strong advocate of girls' rights in central Malawi. She also told VOA the lower court could have considered the plight of the violated girls before handing down the sentence.
This is not good to our girls in Malawi, because if they have HIV/AIDS, then their whole life will be in misery. We must think first for the future of these girls, not for the culture. That culture must be abolished.
Principal Magistrate Innocent Nebi told the court Tuesday that the sentence was largely based on Aniva telling police that he slept with over 100 women while he knew that he was HIV positive. Last year, Malawi banned child marriage, raising the legal age of marriage from 15 to 18 years of age in an effort to end early sexual initiations. Aniva's lawyer, Michael Gobachipeta, said he would appeal against both the conviction and sentence. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
It has been almost 3 years since the start of the Ebola epidemic in West Africa. The disease killed more than 11,000 people and laid bare the weaknesses of public health systems in the region. No new Ebola cases have been reported since March, but the three most affected countries remain on alert. VOA traveled along the path of the outbreak to find out what has changed and how the region might cope if the virus re-emerges. Jennifer Lazuta reports from the Kenema Government Hospital in eastern Sierra Leone, where the vast majority of nurses remain unpaid.
We are not on salary, mother.
Bring up the question of salary and you will see tensions rise in the pediatric ward at the Kenema Government Hospital in Sierra Leone. 12 of the 15 nurses in the unit work here 6 days a week as volunteers. Most have been here for years without any pay, and many, like Nurse Adama Kala, risked their lives to work in the Ebola treatment units, or ETUs, during the epidemic.
Up to date, they have not yet enrolled us. I'm still not paid. I'm not feeling good. I'm feeling bad. I'm just thinking that if I lose my life during the time, all my children are going to suffer just like that. So I regret it to work at the Ebola Center.
And that is the concern here, that if another health emergency strikes, volunteer nurses may not answer the call again. This hospital in Kenema was the first place Ebola appeared in Sierra Leone. Some of the nurses who treated Ebola patients got hazard pay, but after the ETUs closed, many had to go back to being unpaid volunteers. Dr. Prince Masuba is the hospital superintendent.
Yeah, we are not denying that it may not have negative impacts. If we have too many volunteers, that may have to slow down the work. Sometimes people will be demotivated. It could even contribute to the other workers who have been paid to be demotivated.
Less than a third of the 400 nurses working here are paid. Dozens of healthcare workers at the Kenema Hospital got Ebola during the epidemic, most likely by caring for patients. 40 of them died, including revered virologist Dr. Sheikh Umar Khan. A monument to their sacrifice now stands outside the hospital's new maternity ward. All 40 names are engraved in bronze. The health ministry says it is working with the World Bank to give the family of each health worker who died $5,000, though no money has been disbursed yet.
Until now, I'm not feeling happy. At any time when I remember Dr. Khan and my colleague, you know, the tears run my eyes. It was not easy.
Nurse Fatima Sise got Ebola treating a fellow nurse who had the virus. She was wearing protective gear designed for Lassa fever patients, not Ebola. But that was all the hospital had at the time. The nurses say one improvement since the epidemic has been the training on infection prevention and control, known as IPC. Reminders to wash your hands are posted around the hospital. Fatmata puts on the mask to treat a patient, throwing it away when she is done.
Because the IPC have made us to know that we are risking our life before Ebola. Even if it is not Ebola patient, but we have another disease that will affect us.
cholera, hepatitis, Lassa fever. There are quite a few infectious diseases that could show up at this hospital. The nurses say, at the very least, they are better prepared than before, although they would also like to be paid. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Sierra Leone.
It's 25 minutes past the hour, and here now is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria, with Daybreak Africa Sports. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning, James. We begin with the latest FIFA ranking of footballing nations in Africa. Senegal is ranked 33rd in the world and is Africa's number one in the latest FIFA ranking of footballing nations. Senegal displaced Ivory Coast, who slipped to number 34 in the world and second in Africa, tied alongside Tunisia. Egypt are now ranked 4th in Africa and 36th in the world, moving 10 notches up the ladder. The other African countries in the top 50 are Congo DR, Burkina Faso and Nigeria, ranked 8th in Africa and 50th in the world. Argentina are number 1 in the world, closely followed by cross-country rivals Brazil in number 2. Reigning world champions Germany dropped to the 3rd position, with South American kings Chile occupying the 4th position. Now to the African Women Cup of Nations, currently taking place in Cameroon. Nigeria coach Florence Omabimi has questioned South African referee Ahona Makelima over her decision not to award the Super Falcons a penalty against Ghana in their Cameroon 2016 African Women's Cup of Nations Group B clash in Limbe on Wednesday. Her Black Queen's counterpart Yusufu Basige said he was not happy with the outcome of the clash, saying his team deserved 4 points from the fixture. In today's fixture, Zimbabwe will play host to Cameroon in the early kickoff, while South Africa will square out against Egypt in the later game. Elsewhere, Spanish prosecutors have recommended that Cameroonian football great Samuel Eto'o be handed a 10-year jail sentence and pay a staggering $19 million fine, a court ruling revealed on Thursday. The prosecutor alleges that Eto'o set up a series of front companies to avoid paying taxes during his decade of soccer success in Spain's La Liga, where he notably fronted Barcelona's attack. The main charges focus on a company Eto'o allegedly established in 2006 to hide his image rights, hiding some 4 million euros from tax authorities. In basketball news, 5 teams, including Tunisia's Club Africain, will compete for 2 qualifying tickets for the FIBA African Champions Cup final at a Zone 1 qualifying tournament set for November 24th to December 1st in Al Hoceima in Morocco. 6 other teams have already booked their tickets for the FIBA Africa Champions Cup final, scheduled for next December in Egypt. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Over to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. 8 Egyptian soldiers were killed Thursday in a car bombing at a checkpoint in northern Sinai. Egyptian officials say at least 12 troops were injured and 3 militants also died in the attack. Egypt's military spokesman, Mohamed Samir, said in a statement posted on his official Facebook page that the militants also blew up an armored vehicle at a checkpoint near the troubled city of El Arish. No group has claimed responsibility. And that's it for this Friday, November 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good weekend.
Hello, Africa music fans. We have hours of the music that you love every day. Some things change, some remain the same. From the north to the south and the east to the west, we play only the best. Tune in at 0100, 0200, 1200 and 1300 UTC, GMT, right here on VOA Africa.
VOA. On Africa News Tonight, we let the sound tell the story, putting you in the middle of events from Africa's news to world crises. Africa News Tonight comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies, 6080 kilohertz and 15580 kilohertz. We are also live on the internet at www.voaafrica.com.